Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to another Rahalastapa, this week with Roberts Webb's Robert Webb. It's his third time on the show. This one was recorded remotely, of course, because we were deep in the heart of lockdown. Remember that? What was that all about? Remember we all stayed inside and didn't come out? Why? What were we thinking? We're allowed out now. Go and lick each other in the face. Everything's fine. They have a cure. If you enjoy these podcasts, please tell your friends about them. Just by listening to them with the adverts, you are helping us out. So thank you for doing that. If you would like to make an actual contribution, why not become a monthly badger? GoFasterStripe.com/badges. Loads of extras, including backstage interviews and chance to win prizes and much, much more. You can link your Twitch accounts and Amazon Prime account and give us £5 a month without any cost to yourself. It'd be lovely if you did that. If you look in the videos at Herring 1967 on YouTube, you can find out how to do that if you're confused. Do remember to resubscribe. Thank you to everyone who has given us free money from Ian Amazon. And you can pay your own money there as well if you want, which a few of you have done. So thank you for that. Twitch TV keeps going. Twitch.tv/RKHerring. Various things going on there, including recording Rahalastapas every Wednesday at 8 p.m. So you can tune in, watch them live before they're edited down to nothing and we take out all the contentious bits. Thanks for watching and listening. Let's sit back, relax and enjoy Rahalastapa with Robert Webb. Welcome to Richard's Attic. Please welcome a man who's been wearing a bum bag on his face. It's Richard Herring. Hello, here I am. It wasn't me just crouching down. I hope you can all hear me and everything's going okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Richard Herring's Lava Submerging Trauma podcast, which is based on, I did talk about this on the Twitch stream earlier in the week, but I've been homeschooling my daughter because I'm an amazing parent, as well as trying to work and keep the house tidy. I'm an incredible. My daughter was wanting to watch someone playing Minecraft on YouTube. And I said she couldn't do that. I said she had to draw something, and she went, and I took the iPad off her, and she went, fine. And she went to the table and then very quickly, like so fast, just got and drew this picture and then brought it to me and said, there you are, and shoved it in my face. She said, that's it. And then she said, that's you falling in some lava. And that she was angry with me, which I thought was quite funny. It's quite good lava. And then she took it back off me and she said, wait. And then she drew very, very quickly this little green thing here. And she said, that is a crocodile, and you're falling into the mouth of a crocodile. There it is, which was, you know, a nice... It's a very good crocodile. There it is. I'll put it that way up. I mean, if you had to draw a crocodile in 2 seconds, you couldn't do better than that. You know, I don't, I'm not sure that's exactly me, but the hair's nearly me. You have to watch this on video. It looks a bit like a crossed-out cock, the lava, but it's still good. So she's funnier than I am. She kind of, that was a brilliant diss back to me. Also, quite a good emergency question. I think I might ask my guest that today. Would you rather be... eaten by a crocodile or submerged in a pool of lava? Because it's kind of, in a way, you think, well, the crocodile's saving me from going in the lava, but then is being eaten by a crocodile better than going into lava or worse? It would be a more painful, well, a slower death. Anyway, but I was hanging around with some 4G conspiracy theorists. They're great guys. They think that 5G, rather, conspiracy theorists. They think, and some, there were some 4G ones there as well. They weren't as popular. They. I said to them, "Do you not think it's weird Boris Johnson has rolled out this 5G thing, but then gets the coronavirus that's caused it?" And they say, "No, that's what they want." You think that's all part? They had an answer for everything. Anyway, they call it Rahalastapa, and they call 5G fugger. And 4G, forget as well. That's what they do. Yeah, and I've been wearing a bum bag as a mask. I don't really have anything to wear as a mask. I went into Hitchin the other day. I've been to the supermarket. That's the only time I've been out of the house and out of the village. And I had to go and have an MOT because I'd forgotten to do it. And I thought you could extend it at the end of the month. And then I found out I should have done my MOT in January. I usually do it in April. I don't know what had happened. And so I had to take it in. And then I had to walk round Hitchin, and I thought, well, I haven't got anything to wear. And then I found the bum bag I use for running. It goes round your stomach, not your bum. And it's quite good. You can put it around your face, and it's quite breathable. But, you know, if you told me in January, you know, you'll be walking around Hitchin Town Centre with a bum bag on your face, I would have said you were mad. But there's a lot of things like that, aren't there? If you said to Captain Tom in January, you know, you'll earn 20, 30 million pounds before May comes around and you'll be at number one. He would have probably said, no, that's quite unlikely. Me One versus Me Two Snooker is going to be on the BBC. If you'd told me that 3 weeks ago, I'd have said you were mad. But that, there you go. It's a crazy world. What crazy things are happening to you that wouldn't have happened? Good to see you. Congratulations to Boris Johnson. Sort of the headlines he's had. Him and his girlfriend have had a baby. But, I mean, if they're going to make that headline news, that is going to waste... You know, that's practically every day that's going to happen, isn't it? It's somewhere. And I was watching Sliding Doors on Sunday, which may come up again with my guest, because it's John Hannah. No. But now I've said that, that's wrong. I need to say I wish it was. I don't wish it was, because John Hannah was terrible in that film. And I've decided after seeing Sliding Doors that I'm going to try and get to a point where saying the word shagging instead of fucking, like, not for shagging, but, you know, fucking hell, or this is a fucking disgrace. Because in Sliding Doors, they obviously, to get around some kind of PG certificate, they say shagging. This is shagging ridiculous. I want to try and popularise that, make that more popular than saying fucking, so that when people watch Sliding Doors in 10 years' time, as I'm sure they will, it will seem normal that people are saying that, and it won't take you out of the film and make you think, why were they saying that? I have a lot of problems with Sliding Doors. As you know, you can watch the... my director's commentary of it, if you want, still in the videos on Twitch. But we may get onto that as there is a little crossover with my guest's book. What else do I want to say? Thank you for everyone who subscribed on Twitch. It's very easy to do. If you're an Amazon Prime member, you have a free £5 a month that you can give to me out of Ian Amazon's stupid pockets. I want to build a wall, and I'm going to make Ian Amazon pay for it. You can see me stone clearing in the morning. You can see me playing snooker in the evening. You can see me commentating on films on Sundays. You can see me playing myself at video games, some just at random times. And you can see me doing Rahalastapas on Wednesday. I haven't got a guest for next week yet, but it'll be someone good. So let's have a little look and see who he is. He is probably best known as the narrator of Family Guy groundbreaking gags. That's why we're all here. But, of course, to most of us, We'll always remember him as the host of Robert's Web, whatever else he tries to do. Will you please welcome the amazing Robert Webb, ladies and gentlemen? There he is, from Robert's Web.
Hello!
How are you doing?
I'm very well. I'm extremely well. How are you? Good.
Yeah, well, I'm all right. I'm getting through it you've stopped drinking. I'm getting through it by starting drinking again and drinking too much. But
our paths will sort of cross in
it. Will at some point.
It's shagging ridiculous.
It is. See, it's good, isn't it? It'll come back.
Yeah, I'm already quite into it.
Yeah, I think I've been doing it. You know, you're a shagwit and stuff like that. You can, for shag's sake.
Shag off.
It's good.
Mother shagger.
Have you thought about bringing back Robert's Web in lockdown as a lockdown series that you could do from your home?
There's a thought. Yeah. I mean, blimey. Because all you need is all of the researcher, the whole team of what I'd be missing would be the whole team of researchers who are going through Twitter trying to find amusing things that Kanye had said. Right. If Kanye was even, if he wasn't even alive in 2012 or whenever we did it. And for me to say witlessly sarcastic things.
I think this is the time you can look through. You can do that yourself.
I could do that myself.
You can write.
It might be almost as good if I did it myself.
You've written books. You can write. You can read out some tweets. What do you remember much about the narration of Family Guy groundbreaking gags? And what were the groundbreaking gags in Family Guy?
I'm sure I gave it my all, and I sounded like I was really into the groundbreaking. How did they break ground?
I don't know. I explained
at some point, but no, I'm afraid that particular information about just why that ground got broken by Family Guy has now eludes me.
All right, well, I'll ask you my new emergency question written by my daughter unknowingly. Would you rather fall into a pool of lava or at the last minute be eaten by a crocodile instead of falling into the pool of lava?
I think it's got to be headfirst into the lava because that's the faster death. I mean, the crocodile sounds like, I mean, it would be even slower than like when Quint buys the farm at the end of Jaws, and that looks pretty flipping, shagging, painful. So when all the blood comes out, I was allowed to watch that film on the telly when I was about 8 and... Yeah, that ending was... That stayed with me.
I think with the crocodile as well. The crocodile is in the lava, if you look at the...
Yes, I can see.
And,
it's a crocodile that doesn't mind lava?
Well, clearly. I don't know. Or is when you go into the crocodile, it'll eat you, and then the crocodile will be burnt up by the lava, and then you'll still be sentient as you'll be, I'm eating, and then in the crocodile's gut, you will then be burnt up as well. So I think it's probably better just go straight in the lava.
Because if it was one of those crocodiles that doesn't have any teeth and you can survive inside the crocodile and the crocodile is lava proof, that's the best place to be. Really.
Yeah, if you can swim, you could get your arms into its legs and swim.
Yeah,
swim out like that.
It could be fun. It could be a whole new thing.
That's a way through. Good. Well, that's all I really wanted to talk to you about was those things. So thanks for coming.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks for coming to my attic. Oh, no, you're in your attic. It's been
as
easy.
Always.
It's easy. I've nearly the same dressing gown as you. Nearly.
I like it. It's an accident, but I've got... I think this is the room that I laughingly call my study, but I think it's a bit of a giveaway that I've got a dressing gown in it. But I like the way that the stripiness of my dressing gown also slightly complements the more horizontal stripes of the picture behind me.
Yeah,
so,
it does work,
you know, it's almost as if it's all thought out. It isn't.
But you should sit... When you're working in your study, you should sit in a dressing gown smoking a pipe. As you're ruminating, thinking about jokes, that would be good.
Yes. Well, normally I dress for dinner every time I sit down to write, like Lord Byron. I mainly, you know, dress up in a three-piece suit, in a three-piece suite. Actually,
yeah,
I dress up in upholstery because that's how wacky I am.
So, look, I've been reading your books. I was forced to actually read because the audiobook of your book is not yet out.
Doesn't exist.
So I usually have the audiobooks, but you know what? I've read the whole fucking thing. It's even difficult to do, even when I'm trying to popularise it, in a day. I started at, I'd say, about 10 o'clock, and I have done other things as well. I finished by just at 5 o'clock, so it took me 6 or 7 hours to read the whole thing, and I read the whole thing more or less in one sitting.
Very shagging impressive.
And I was up at 5 o'clock this morning, so I was very tired. And I've not read a book for a long time and got very far with it. I was gripped. It was very exciting. It's in my wheelhouse of interests. It's about As I was saying to you beforehand, it's before we started, I'm doing a sitcom slash book about alternate universes, which is partly about the choices we make and how with lovers and how they could have been. They could, if fate had intervened, they could have been different. If you met people in a different order, it could be a different. Which is sort of what your thing. So your it's a bit like Goodnight Sweetheart meets Sliding Doors meets Bobby Ewing falling asleep and dreaming a whole series.
Truly madly, deeply meets One Day meets Back to the Future meets any films with you know what we're doing by now.
Sort of Groundhog Day. I think it's a neat thing. It's got a neat gimmick of it sort of being a dream, but not being a dream and being too real to be a dream. But you're getting that chance to go back to universe times, which again I'm very fascinated by that sort of period in your life where you're left school and sort of starting out in the world. And so basically, I'm allowed to say so much. I don't want to give too much away, but I think it's fair enough to say that a woman who's lost her husband, who she met at university, gets the chance to go back to meet him again and try and warn him that he is going to die in 28 years.
Yes, yeah, that's it. Kate Marsden, our heroine, she lost her husband, Luke, about 9 months ago. They met when they were kids. They met when they were the first week of the University of York, but he died recently and she's not getting better. She's in terrible trouble. One day she wakes up, she's 18 years old, she remembers everything. She's in her college room. This was the week, in fact, this was the day that she met Luke for the first time. But she knows how he died, she knows he's already ill, she thinks she's there to warn him. She's going to try and do everything exactly the same, hence comedy.
But there always is with this sort of stuff, but there's some good philosophy in there. And I really like the fact that she's, as she is still the mind of a 45-year-old woman with all those experiences inside the body of a 18-year-old. Is that cheating? If you know, hold on, we won't go into that. She sort of doesn't really fall for him in the same way, or she sort of sees through his pretensions that...
Yeah, because he's not the middle-aged man that she lost. He's the annoying 19-year-old English student that she first met. In fact, she kind of went out with him despite his personality to start with, because he's very good-looking, and it's okay to be that shallow when you're a teenager. But then they stayed together, and and part of what made him the man that he became was his relationship with her. So when, because we affect each other over 28 years, obviously you're a big influence on you, on whoever you're with, even for not as ridiculously long as that. But, she meets her and she's forgotten all of these shagging, affectation. And he's still pretending to be French and he's still pretending to have read books that he hasn't read. And he's still gaslighting people. And he's full of all of this kind of affectation and bullshit, except when she gets him on his own, and then she tries to tell him, and that conversation kind of happens in the middle of the book, and it does not go well.
No, it's very evocative, I think, of that. I mean, again, for people of our rough generation, the 80s and 90s students, it's very, that middle section is very evocative of that time and the student unions and the kind of people you met at that time, and
the kind of people who, if they weren't your mates, you'd find really annoying.
Yeah.
But you can tell that, that sometimes you can see on the faces of other people that the people you were with were behaving badly or obnoxiously, and actually, but it's fine because he's my friend. I'm talking about David Mitchell, of course, and how outrageous and obnoxious he could become in his cups. But it's not an accident that it's set in 1992, because that's when I was a fresher, and so I didn't have to do that much detailed research. I remember something of the clothes and the music and the Atomic Dustbin and everyone wearing T-shirts over long sleeve tops and all that stuff. And the 90s generally is sort of interesting. I mean, it was, to me, certainly when I wrote this in 2018, 2019, and the whole thing was Trump and Brexit, and I thought, I'm going to daringly write something set in the present day and I'm not going to mention Brexit. And it felt like, oh, the early 90s is this kind of golden era of massive boredom, that it was, there were loads of things that were wrong with it, but it wasn't just totally fucking weird the way I thought. The way I thought 2018, 2019 was fucking weird. Little did I know it was about to get lethally much weirder. But There we are. So anyway, the book is kind of suspicious about nostalgia at the same time as enjoying a bit of nostalgia.
But, you know, it is, you know, because it, the changes, you know, and that's where, again, like you say, 20, 30 years. I remember that thing of queuing up, having to queue up for the telephone. There was two telephones, yeah. I think, in the college, and you had to queue up for them. And if someone stayed in there for ages, you just had to wait for them. If you got messages, they were stuck up on the, like, a little board in the,
right.
the entrance. And, like, one of the messages I got was for Rich Herring, can you tell him his granddad has died? That was just, it wasn't even, you know, your granddad's like, can you tell him? They just wrote down, can you tell him his granddad has died? I knew my granddad was going to die, but it was still...
All those people who think their granddad hasn't just died, take one step forward. Where the fuck are you going, Richard Herring?
But it's, you know, but it's funny because they're just sort of thinking back to that time, which obviously you must have done, you know, the people you just randomly meet and she meets them in a different order and that sort of changes priorities with them a little bit. But, you know, you randomly make connections. That exact thing you talk about, some people you meet and then you think, oh, maybe this will be the friend that I have for the rest of my life. And the people you do become friends with will be the friends of your rest of life, probably the most important friends of your life from that particular period.
Yeah, it's a sort of crackpot lottery of Freshers Week, isn't it? Yeah. That you're sort of talking to someone and you're slightly, well, I speak for myself, but I was slightly on edge whenever I met a new person in my year at that college or certainly doing the same subject. Am I talking to someone whose funeral I will one day attend or whose children I will be godfather to?
Yeah.
Or is this another person that I will have forgotten the name of by next Tuesday?
You were thinking that at the time, were you? Do you remember thinking
that? No, I wasn't thinking that. No, you're right. I wasn't thinking that at the time. I wasn't at all. I thought they were all going to be my best friends.
But it's a weird thought to think about how, you know, how those choices and that random luck. And what I like about the book is that the randomness of encounters, if one thing changes, then everything changes, which a lot of these sliding doors style time travel ideas, alternate universe ideas don't get. I won't talk about the end of the book. I'm not 100% happy with the end of the book. That's what I'm going to say to you. But yes, I can't talk about it because I don't want to give away what happens.
Yeah, but, well, this will sound like a cop out, but I keep thinking of the reply Mark Hamill got from Harrison Ford. Mark Hamill was coming out of, they were filming Star Wars, as we call it, or A New Hope, as proper fans probably call it. And, you know, Luke Skywalker's just all wet from escaping from the monster in the trash compactor, and he comes out. And he tells this story. He said to Harrison Ford, but my hair's still wet and it should be, I'm sorry, my hair should be still wet. Why is it all dry? And Harrison Ford goes, it's not that kind of movie. And, you know, if they care about his hair being not wet, then something's gone wrong with Star Wars. And in the same way, I've written an adventure story, really. You can tell that I'm not massively interested in the whole sci-fi paradox.
I think generally it's very strong in that, though. And it's fine for you to do what you do at the end. It is actually, of course it is. But just from my own this is my actual wheelhouse of all I care about in my life is all the universe and time travel. And so I'm going to give you 98% on it. I'm just going to. That's not a bad score. Sliding Doors gets 4%.
Sliding Doors with John Hannah, who's great in a couple of other things, loads of other things that I've seen him in. But unfortunately, he has the thankless task of playing the character who we're supposed to think is likable and funny because he goes to dinner parties and he does impressions of Monty Python sketches.
Don't get me started.
While getting all kind of red in the face. And you're calm down, love. What are you doing? Why do people think that's good? Shut your shagging face.
You could repurpose it there's that Mrs. Doubtfire trailer that someone's done of it as a sort of sinister thriller where you could easily do that with Sliding Doors and him being a terrible stalker. There's bits where he's staring at her with his, he's just, he behaves very oddly. And I've watched it many times, but I've watched it on Sunday, and this time I sort of realised that they're alternate universes. It's not like one of them disappears at the end. We go into one of them and they meet again. But in the other one, John Hannah has just met someone, lied to them completely unnecessarily. He could have just told her that he was married and it wouldn't have been an issue because he was getting divorced. That's led to a chain of events that gets her, spoiler alert, though I think this film is already spoiled already, by him losing her and his unborn child. So in his that universe, and I guess his mum would die in that universe as well. And I guess for the rest of his life, John Hannah is just a wreck. And two babies die in the film. You know, it's not a romantic comedy. Yeah. Two babies die
it
in the film.
It's a nasty taste. That's bad energy. I'm getting bad karma from that.
It is. So I did not enjoy it. John Hannah, it's the women characters all make sort of things that men would say about women comments, which I'm pleased to say. Well, you've got a female protagonist in your novel, and I think she's a very well-rounded and female character written by a man, which you cannot say about the female characters in Sliding Doors. A, that one of them finds a man who does the Spanish Inquisition sketch sexually attractive. That would never happen, Robert.
It would never happen. No, the important thing to do with the female protagonist is to make sure she has a dysfunctional relationship with her mother.
Yes.
And then you're fine. And then everyone believes, all right, I was worried about this character. And then it turns out her mum's a nightmare. Now I believe it. So that's my top tip.
Yeah. I would like to see. I thought it was all good. I really loved the middle section. And I think you sort of feel like there's so much to explore in that idea of being able to go back to 1992, or in my case, 1987, I suppose, and and meet the people. Her going to see a dad who's now dead as well, and I could go and see my granddad and say, "That was good that you're not dead anymore." Just at the beginning, I think there's a lot of interesting things in that idea. I mean, I think I spent my whole life kind of yearning to go back to have another crack at being 18 or 19.
Very, very common daydream. But then you sort of, if you think about it logically, as you will have done if you're writing this kind of thing, that after the first 5 seconds, you realise it probably wouldn't be very nice at all. You'd be very, very lonely. It'd be a massively isolating thing. Because you have all of this pre-knowledge and foreknowledge, rather. And then you're surrounded by, and certainly in Kate's position, she's surrounded by all of her lifelong friends, none of whom know who she is. Including her future dead husband, she's being introduced to for the first time. He said, "It's Kate, isn't it?" And it's all of that is very. It's a really lonely thing. So I think it would be horrible. Of course, the daydream goes completely wrong as soon as you have kids. Just one of the reasons that Kate doesn't. I didn't give Kate children. See, as I talk like a novelist, I'm going full Patrick Marver. Any minute now, I should become incredibly grand. She can't have kids because as soon as you go back to 1992, she would be completely out of her mind with anxiety about what's happened to my children. In the same way, you can't really, the whole let's go back in time, what would you change, doesn't work, because if you don't meet your current partner when you met them and conceive those kids when you did before you've done anything, you've bumped off your kids by accident. Yeah. So,
but you've bumped off all those other kids by not having sex with your partner or other people at a different time. So think of all the kids you've killed. You're worse than Joey from Bread, you are. He only killed two kids. You've killed an infinite number of children.
I was thinking about Joey from Bread the other night as I tried to get to sleep, but that didn't help. There were six in that family. There was Joey. Yeah. There was the big one, the little one, the fat one, the good-looking one, and the woman.
Yeah, there was the woman one as well, yeah. I never really got into Bread.
No.
But Carla Lane did some excellent sitcoms as well as some weird.
Butterflies was great.
Butterflies was very good. There we go. Let's talk. I mean, you have talked about this in the press. I don't know how much you want to talk about it, but the slightly chilling thing about the book, and this has happened to me quite a lot when I've been writing, is the character who goes on to die is trying to write a book, and he sort of writes a book which almost predicts, or it seems to be aware that there's something inside him that might kill him, but he doesn't really realise, but then it does kill him. And as you were writing this book, or just after you'd written this book, you discovered that you had something within you that was...
I had something very wrong with me, the book is about Kate, but Luke, and we see a bit of Luke, and Luke obviously is this her middle-aged husband who drops dead at the age of 47 while he's emptying the dishwasher because he's had a very, very slow-growing meningioma, a brain tumour. It is possible to have a tumour that he's had since before she met him. And then it turned out, and the book was finished, and then it turned out I went to a routine medical for the second series of Back, sitcom I do with David. Mm-hmm. And they're usually very functory affairs. The GP just tells you to cough and you're out of there. He just put a stethoscope on my heart and said, "Oh, that's blinding. What are we doing about the heart murmur?" And I said, genuinely, "What heart murmur?"
Yeah.
And then when the studio laughter had died down, he said, "You've got a really pronounced murmur." I didn't even know what a heart murmur was. It just means it sounds fucking weird, shagging weird when he's listening to it. There's something wrong going on. And then I saw a cardiologist and had various tests. The cardiologist said, "Well, you're not going to have a heart attack in the next fortnight. But if we don't fix this over the next 2 or 4 or 6 months, this heart will fail." So that got my attention. So it turned out I needed, and it wasn't something they can fix with pills. And it's not something they do as sort of interesting new keyhole surgery. If you're young enough and you haven't had surgery, this kind of surgery before, the best outcomes come from open heart surgery. So that's what happened on the 1st of November last year. And so I've written this book about a character who has this kind of lurking thing that's massively wrong with him.
Yeah.
And I'm completely open to the idea that was my imagination trying to tell me something. I wish it had been a bit less subtle. but I think that's what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, you wrote about it in The Observer, I think, this weekend, it's last weekend, and it's a very moving and interesting piece. I mean, it made me feel... I mean, that whole idea of that. So I did once go and have a medical, and or not the same thing happened because I was okay in the end. But they were doing the heart stuff and testing my heart, and then they sort of they stopped and they looked a bit concerned, and then went out of the room. And I was sitting there about 5 minutes thinking, we went to go on a running machine next. They came and said, "We can't carry on the medical because you've got an unusual heartbeat, and we're going to have to send you to hospital." And then, so I know, I think partly because I've been through that experience of just that moment where you go, oh, fuck, I might be about to die.
Yeah.
Or, you know, be in big, big trouble. As it turned out, my heart just beats in a stupid way. I have a funny heart. It's meant to do, it goes down instead of up on one bit, and it's always done it. And it's they did a 3D model of my heart, you know, on the computer and all that
stuff.
And it's all right, I think. I mean, it's the idea of the getting that moment where you're given that news, but also then having to go through a very, very intense procedure like that has it made you, you're right about kind of appreciating life now you're at the other end, but was it, what kind of, effect did it have on you before everything was through? Were you sort of thinking, "I've got to get my affairs in order," and this?
I mean, there was this really weird, and that was the hardest bit. Really, there was this weird sort of 2.5 week period in between when I knew what was going on and before I had the operation, where I was just quite sort of creeping around at home quietly, trying not to have a heart attack.
Yeah, well, that's the terrifying when you go, "It's not going to be probably the next 2 weeks, but it could be the next 3 months." You go, "What if it's now? What if it just happens I walk out the office?"
And I even I did about a week and a half on Back.
Right.
I turned up for it because you know what it's like. Years of conditioning of you cannot miss a day's location shoot.
Yeah.
It's impossible to reorganize this. You've got 50 people standing around with nothing to do if you're not there. You've had this for 20 years and you kind of go, "I can't." Well, obviously I've got to finish Back before I have the heart operation, right? I mean, obviously. I mean, they can't. And then and then gradually, and they were. Brilliant, and the producer especially, Lindsay Robinson. The first day I went in there, because I'd only found out the day before, and I went in for the first day, and she came into my trailer and I told her, and she said, "Forget about work." And that was the first and pretty much the only time I really, really cried. Because she's saying, because it's a hell of a thing to say, because she's the person who's got to, got this ridiculously complicated job of reorganizing the schedule. If you lose one of the main actors, and they're going to shoot every, which is what they did. They shot for 3.5 weeks with no me.
Yeah,
And then the idea was after 4 months I would come back and they'd shoot all of my bits.
Right.
Which we nearly finished, and then obviously the virus kicked in. We had to stand down because of the virus. So, you know, it's a slightly ill-fated production. We'll probably get another three scenes in the can before the Great London Tsunami, you know, takes it out for another 4 months.
Could you just do those in front of a green screen in your office? Just and then
I think those missing scenes, there should just be claymation. There should just be me and David as sort of morphin' Chaz. And we'll do the voices.
It's funny, we talked about last time, we were sort of saying, glibly talking about death the last time you were on, and saying, oh, you know, when it'd be tragic if you die in your 40s, but in your 50s, it's not as bad in 60s as. But then, you know, that. So you would have been, this is like, so you're about 48 now, are you 47, 48?
47, yeah. That would definitely be tragic.
I would have been sad if you died.
People would definitely admire, and, you know, hopefully, I'd have got a bit of, oh, the funny one always dies first. I mean, that's my hope.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'll take with me. But, you know, I won't be around to see whether people say that or not. I mean, they probably won't say that.
I'll let you know.
At least that'll
I'll let you know something. I'll send some message through to you. And they do, when they have open heart surgery, they have to turn your heart off to do that. Is that right?
Oh, they do all sorts. The video is available if I want to watch it. I'm really not going to. But there's a nice little 7-inch incision here, and then they saw your breastbone, and then they crank it open. So when you recover, sorry about that. So then when you
I shouldn't have asked. So I'm so squeamish.
All of your ribs and intercostals have all been pushed around somewhere where they really mustn't be. So you can't sleep on your side for months.
Right.
So that was hard. And it all, obviously, it all aches and it's all very tender around here. And it's just shit for ages. And
yeah.
You know, they give you painkillers and it's all right, really. And well, I was caning the... I turned out to be not allergic, but the morphine was making me throw up. So they changed it to OxyContin, which was quite Moorish.
Okay.
That was quite nice. That was like the one moment I thought, I can get used to this. But only once.
And so is it, having done that, is it sort of definitely everything's okay, or do you have to keep on looking at yourself?
They're all very pleased with me. Cardiologist says, because she was saying you've got one of the weirdest hearts I've ever seen, because it had grown and completely changed shape in order to keep this show on the road. Right. The problem, by the way, was a prolapsed mitral valve. One of the valves had just, they're supposed to open and close like that, and one was just going like this. So the heart was having to really massively compensate, and it was about to just give up. But she's saying I've got a normal heart function now, and I'm sort of semi-shielding because I'm not quite, even 6 months after, it's such a weirdly traumatic operation that even 6 months later I'm not really in a condition to you know, 10 rounds with coronavirus.
No.
So that would still knock me for 8, if not 7. I have to not get that, really.
Yeah, stay in that little office with the...
I'll just stay here. I've got my dressing gown. It's fine.
But, you know, I think that's the corona. The coronavirus, you're obviously thinking, just as a regular person, oh, you know, it's everyone's saying it's old people and you'll be fine. And then it's just sort of gradually become like more and more apparent that it could be so much worse anyway. But also overweight men, middle-aged men are in quite a bit of danger. And last week I thought, oh, well, I'll try and lose. Better for the sake of the kids, I better lose some weight and get fit. And I did it for 2 days and then, you know, I thought, oh, fuck it. I'll drink some beer instead. So
it was good. It was really, it was really useful for me because I was drinking too much and still fucking smoke. Well, I've been on and off with the cigarettes, but I've been, you know, in a sort of, your brain gets hijacked by addiction and you're kind of telling yourself, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me. I'll just, you know, this on this birthday or this weekend or this anniversary or the, you know, this will be the moment where I, and so it was really good. Like, I mean, it provided a really good gap in the domino topple, which you need sometimes, and they literally turned me off and on again. And so you come out of hospital and the last thing you want to do, a glass of wine just looks like a face full of poison, because you suddenly have this newfound affection for your internal organs and you're kind of like, they're my guys now, I've got to look after my guys and not give them all this extra shit to deal with.
Well, good. Well, you know, it is, there's a lot of positives there, and it's a very positive article you wrote about it. It's a really beautifully written article. And I'm glad that you were, sorting all that stuff out as well.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The thing I was going to talk about the book, actually, was it's sort of, do you find that as a comedian, being seen as a comedian and actor when you write, there seem to be a few little, not digs exactly in the book about critics, but certainly a few comments about critics. Do you find that critics are a bit snobby towards you trying to write a novel?
It's had universally positive reviews from proper critics. In fact, I haven't seen a bad review from a normal punter either, and I do look. It's all been nice so far. They have to sort of say... I saw a Financial Times review... No, it was a TLS review of How Not to Be a Boy, the last book, for the first time recently, and that was quite snotty, and that was kind of... Somebody, brackets, probably his publisher... has had the idea to make the memoir about masculinity, and actually, no, fuck off, that was my idea. I knew perfectly well that no one was going to buy a memoir. I'm not famous enough to write a really boring book about my fucking struggle. It had to be good, because it had to be about something, because otherwise... Anyway, so, you know, occasionally you get, you know, critics who reckon they know the genesis of how something happened, and you just go, why are you setting yourself up for such a massively... for the author who knows how this happened anyway. But there hasn't been much of that. There was a guy in the Irish Times who says something about celebrity authors, but then in order to say, but Robert Webb isn't like this.
Okay.
In which case I kind of go, all right, why have a go anyway? But it's fine. I've got nothing to complain about. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think it's the writing's really good. I just sort of, you know, I sort of sometimes think with comedy as well, people just sort of, you know, people... there's a sort of snobbishness, like in film and novels, towards something that's funny less meaningful or whatever. It just sort of seemed within the book there was a few. I mean, it's about literary criticism as well as actual journalistic criticism, but there seemed to be a few like comments I thought about.
Yeah, you get. I've got a bookseller character who talks about how she's not a literary snob, and she looks over at the bestseller table and says, "There's something to recommend," you know. All of those books would give me... I mean, I think that was probably a moment, a slightly anxious moment of me defending this book. She said, give me a decent, you know, some intelligence of a brain, some evidence of a brain, some evidence of a heart, a joke or two, and I'm happy. And I'm sort of thinking, yes, this is what I'm doing, because I really have just written a book, you know, to be as enjoyable as possible. I mean, that's the thing I'm going for, enjoyment. It's not going to win any prizes. But it's also not a load of, it's very, very carefully crafted and written, and
it's full of really interesting ideas, and I think evocative ideas that will, you know, anyone who's been 18 or 19, you know, and looks back from any distance at all, you know, from 2 years or from 30 years or 50 years, will get something out of it. I mean, it is bad about your heart and everything from it, but I'd just like to say that this year I have discovered that I can't, my mind's eye is blind, I can't actually visualise anything inside my head, so I think, you know, just get your life in perspective, mate, because if I try to visualise an apple, I shagging can't visualise it in my head. I just think of an apple and think of the word apple and I can't see an apple. So, my heart doesn't work. I've got that for life.
Well, perhaps you can turn that into, like, drawing. Like,
I can't. That's why I can't draw, because I can't visualise it in my head, can I?
Have you never been able to draw?
Not really, no.
Visualise apples?
I didn't even know I couldn't visualise things until... I was perfectly happy not knowing I couldn't visualise things, assuming I could visualise things, until I realised I can't visualise things.
OK, I'm going to try and visualise something.
Try and think of an apple in your head. What are you seeing?
I can see it in quite a lot of detail, actually. It's really green and shiny and with a nice
3D or 2D?
3D, completely 3D. I can smell it as well. It's fantastic. I'm having a whole sensory experience.
I'm going to try again and see an apple. Maybe it's just I can't see apples, because it's only when I try to think of an apple.
Have you ever seen an apple?
I've seen them, but I can't visualise them now. I know what I can get is I'll get a flash of something that is almost an image, like almost behind my eyes. So it's still not quite there. So if I think of a face, I can almost sort of see my wife's or my daughter's face. I have a feeling of them, but I can't see it. I have a feeling of what an apple is. It's sort of random.
That's genuinely, touchingly upsetting. That's really bad for you. And probably if there are other people, I mean, I can imagine you as a group being misunderstood and people thinking that you're serial killers and that you're not to be trusted. But I see it as just a misfortune, a gift in some ways, because, no, it's not a gift.
Well, I can't be mended. That's the thing. You were mended. You can mend a broken heart, but you can't mend a broken brain. My brain, it's very upsetting. I just wish no one had told me about it, because...
You were happy.
I was happy, and now I'm just thinking, if I want to visualise an apple, I've got to go downstairs and get a fucking apple and look at it. Like that, go look at it, go, good. That's what
it is. Just try and make sure you're only missing out on visualising things that you can actually go downstairs and, like, not the Taj Mahal.
I'm trying to visualise it. I'm near, see, it's sort of in the background. It's sort of like that, isn't it? I can think, I can know what it is, but I can't see it. I'm trying to picture Lady Diana in front of the Taj Mahal.
I think about that picture of Princess Di sitting, looking all lonely in front of the Taj Mahal. I can sort of see that.
I'm trying to visualise that now, and I can't visualise it. I can sort of... I've got a little idea of her face then, but it was not...
Yeah.
It was more like a splodge of ink or something.
Oh, this is quite sinister.
Let me ask you some emergency questions. That's one of them I want to know. Everyone so far, I've talked about that perfect 3D. Because it's a spectrum. Some people can see 2D. Some people just see a black and white apple. Some can see a little hazy apple.
I'm kind of moving the camera around. I've got a whole Steadicam thing going on. I can see.
Okay. I'll ask you this emergency question, see how you get on with this. Over the last few months, I have watched every episode of How I Met Your Mother. What is the most degrading thing you've done to yourself for no apparent reason?
Most degrading thing done to myself for no apparent reason.
Can be anything. It's a hard question, Robert. I'll give you that.
God, I mean, it really could be anything. Oh, God.
I know, it's difficult. I've given you mine.
My mind's a blank. I'm literally living, going through a nightmare. The nightmare where somebody asks you a question, loads of people are listening.
It doesn't matter if you can't think of anything.
Everyone's opinion
of you will just go down a notch. That's all that's happening.
Yeah, I think it should. It's good that this isn't being sort of, you know, like a live thing.
If it was live, because we can just edit that out. No one will know you didn't have a degrading.
Hundreds and hundreds of people switch off altogether.
It's a hard question. The problem with it, the questions that are funny aren't as good as the questions that aren't funny, because we've already had a funny question. I'll ask you this instead. I don't think I asked it. No, I think it's too long ago you were on before. If all the art galleries and museums in the world got together and said, we love Robert Webb, we were upset to hear that he had a near-death experience, we would like to make him happy. He can choose any one item from any of the museums or art galleries in the world. It can be a painting, it can be a work of art, it can be a historical artefact. One thing that you're allowed to take home from any museum and keep for yourself, what would you like to have?
I probably the whole of the Angel of the North.
Oh yeah,
it's not in a museum.
No,
it's
counts, like on a hillside.
But I think I'd like to have that on the top of my house.
How do you think the people of the North would feel about you taking the Angel of the North and putting on a house in London?
Well, probably quite similar to the people of Greece, the way they feel about the Elgin Marbles.
They might come and get it back.
I imagine they'd be quite pissed off.
I do love the Angel of the North.
It would just be on a cultural loan. It would just be, I'd just be borrowing it. It just comes to West Hampstead once a month. And then it's quite a big...
When it become the Angel of West Hampstead, though, when it was in West Hampstead, would they call it the Angel of West Hampstead?
They would call it the Angel of Northwest Hampstead.
I think people might be able to work out where you lived. That's the issue.
It would be a bit of a giveaway, yeah.
I love it. I love the Angel of the North. That is one of my favourite works of art. Mm. I like the way it's rusting. It's sort of rusty.
Almost, but presumably he thought of that.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that was an accident.
You'd think, wouldn't you? We should ask him.
What metal did we make this out of? I thought I said make this out of plastic.
Oh, fuck, it's going to be outside. It's going to rain. What happens when it rains?
We built this massive fucking thing. Yeah, it's beautiful. I love passing that on the way up to old Newquay. It's nice. Newcastle, not to Newquay. Very good. Let me see what else I've got for you. What else was I... I've asked you about Robert's Web, alternate universes.
Oh, degrading. Okay, Robert's Web.
Have you thought of a degrading thing?
Robert's Web, yeah. I totally Robert's Web, yes. By making four editions of Robert's Web. That was for no reason.
That was money, wasn't it?
For one reason, money.
Was it a lot of money, though, or was it not very much money?
It was clearly enough to do at the time. I can't remember.
I bet comparative to most of your jobs... It's difficult to indicate, isn't it? Because I guess a job like Robert's Web probably didn't take much up in your actual time.
How dare you? I lived and breathed Robert Web. I had T-shirts. It was an obsession.
So you've written this novel. I find writing increasingly very difficult, and everything is like, if I can do it at the last minute, I can do it. But if I've got time, I just can't get my head around it. And I think it's partly about getting older. It's partly about getting more embarrassed by your failure and more, you know, getting a better writer. It's harder to write shit stuff. You sort of need to write the shit stuff and then change it. How long did it take you to write your book? Because I'd be quite interested.
Shagging ages. With more off than on, 2 years.
Right.
I sort of started, January, February, March of 2018, I spent wandering around the garden going, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Trying to think, because I had the premise ages ago for years. Widow goes back in time, meets future dead husband when he's an annoying teenager. But that was sort of tagged on to with your posh literary interviewers who say, why the move from memoir into fiction? You know, what I don't say, the short answer is it was a 2-book deal. Here's book 2. But there is an artistic, it did seem like a good story and a good idea for a story and a new way to entertain people, which is what I'm about. But I like doing it through books at the moment for some reason. So I wanted to do it for ages, but I had that beginning. I didn't have a middle or an end. And unlike a memoir, which has, you'd have to make up the story. And also in a memoir, no one expects the plot of the story to be any good. They don't even expect an ending. I impose a bit of structure on How Not to Be a Boy, but it doesn't have to have, there's certain things that you don't expect in a memoir that you do expect in a novel. And so it had to, I suddenly got very worried about balance and symmetry and the structure of it. And then I did the worst thing you possibly could do, which is start to read those fucking books about structure and story and all of that and the 5 acts and 3 acts and 8 acts, and just completely paralysed myself. And so I didn't. There was a bit of a gap, and then there was a spurt in the summer of 2018. And then the publisher wanted to see the first half, and then idiotically I asked for notes on the first half instead of just writing them. So then I had to go back and fix all that because I was too worried. It turns out when it comes to are you a planner or a to go by the seat of your pantser, I was a pantser who wished he'd done some planning. I don't think it would have made it a better novel, but I would have had a less stressful time going literally, I don't know what to fucking do.
Yeah, I sort of find those, I mean, I never really got into reading the books or that. I worked on a sitcom that I didn't I didn't do well on, and they didn't use my scripts in the end. But everyone who worked on it was very much into understanding where the beat you hit in which part of the sitcom. And I always like to write everything really without knowing where it's, you know, you've got a good idea of what it is, but you don't know where it's going, so that you surprise yourself. But I think that probably does mean you waste a lot more time than somebody who sits down and plans. But I also think it gives a feeling of spontaneity, and then you actually can have surprises, because I often feel things that are very plotted out in advance, you can sort of see where it's going because you know how those sort of things work. When they are written to formula, you know how the formula works. Whereas I thought, what I liked about you, but there's a couple of misleads and a couple of misdirections and a couple of really good... There's something that happens at the end of the middle chapters where you go, oh, fuck, that completely changes this whole thing. And then, again, I won't say what it is, but there's a revelation and you think the whole thing's completely changed. And I thought that was great, because that really threw me off, because I was thinking, oh, well, they said this is going to happen and this is going to happen, and then suddenly you go, oh no, that's changed everything. So I don't know if that kind of came across you, whether that was something you just sort of chanced across. I think you probably know what I'm talking about.
I'm really pleased to hear that. If it's the thing I think you're talking about, then that sort of midpoint event. Yeah. I deliberately looked for a surprise to happen in the middle of the book. But generally, that was really. I mean, my idea of the structure was set it up enjoyably. Midpoint, whee! I mean, that's sort of. That's it, really.
Because the third part's a kind of, it's like a caper, really. The third part of it sort of, so it is sort of three distinct parts, and it's a chase and a.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes
which is lots of fun. It's a lot of, you know, it's sort of different, not different tone. It's still, but it's a different direction.
Genres. Yeah, it totally jumps genres. I mean, you know, it does a thing you're really not supposed to do at all. And I was trying to get this the you know, because it's. Grief-stricken, time-travelling, rom-com adventure. And so I was trying to get all of this to kind of cohere, and hopefully I have through, just because it's my voice and because I've got an advantage, because people know what I sound like, and it certainly people coming to it from How Not to Be a Boy know that voice.
Yeah.
But also, you know, hopefully because we're rooting for, we give a shit about Kate, and we want it to be okay for Kate, and so we don't mind that it's two, three different things. But you know, sometimes I thought, oh, this is a quiet little thoughtful book about love and grief and memory, and then at other times I notice it's got a punch up and a car chase, and it's just clearly it's just a writer's sitting there going, what would please me next? And it's just, this is the book I would like to read. And in fact, this is certainly the book I would like to read in circumstances like this, because it's pure escapism. And
it really is. And, you know, honestly, being able to sit down and read a book in a day, that's one of my big pleasures. If I'm on holiday... So it's always lovely to research for this show, because it often involves stuff like this. But I hardly ever get all the way through someone's book just because of time constraints. But that's what, on holiday, I will sit down and read, an 80,000 word book in a day, sitting by a pool, you know, having a nice time. So it is, it's a great thing when you can find a book, certainly when you're a bit stressed and tired and there's other stuff going on, that a book that you can actually lose yourself in. And you know, and it does, I think that's, I just think it took me back to university, that middle bit, and just and remembering those things again that we were saying, you know, not having mobile phones and going to the cash point that doesn't charge you any money, and just like there's good little nice observations about how life has changed without it being Peter Kay. Do you remember this? But also because they're not, a lot of them aren't even specific. It's like going to a restaurant that becomes a nightclub, which isn't like a specific thing, but I presume maybe something that you'd experienced in your life at some point.
It was based on, it's set in University of York, and apparently was this Chinese restaurant by day, which would turn into a disco at night.
Right.
And I've changed the name slightly, but I asked, you know, on Twitter, University of York alumni, tell me some things, and bless them, they told me loads of things.
And why did you choose York as the university?
York, because I wanted to be... firstly, I didn't want to do Cambridge again, because everyone's done Cambridge, including me. But also, York, I've just really, whenever I meet people who are there, they're just really, this is really nice people. And they're just really engaged and wholesome and kind of pleasant and funny. And it just gives, I just get a good vibe off the place. And I went to, I did actually do some genuine research. I went on, got on the train and actually walked around. I also, because I wanted a proper campus, and it's got this lake in the middle and it's got this kind of central focus. So it sort of ticked all those boxes.
Good. Well, you know, I'm from York. Was my second choice university. I would have quite liked to go to York. I enjoyed the trip up to, I think on the way back, I think, trying to remember which university. There was a university I went to, it probably was York. I had to stay overnight, and I bought a porn mag and had a wink in the bed and breakfast I was in. And I bought some cigarettes on the way home and smoked in the station. And I didn't smoke and I didn't enjoy it. But I felt like those two things were what my... I was still at school. I felt that was... When I'm at university, I'll be able to do that kind of thing.
I'll be doing this all the time.
That wasn't far from
that. Excellent choice, I have to say.
It was Fiesta magazine. Do you have a porn mag of choice?
I don't remember there being one particular one. No.
I mean, that's a weird thing, isn't it? That's the way to talk about that.
The embarrassment of actually, having to slightly tough it out.
Yeah.
I remember buying something at the same time, and I had to get other things at the same time, so this was just sort of thrown in as an afterthought.
Yeah.
So, the listener and the independent and Razzle.
The drunk women solving crime, my wife is one of who's doing a podcast. They were having a conversation last time I came down from something like this, and they were talking about Reader's Wives porn mags that one of them had heard of, but they didn't really understand what it was. Do you remember the Reader's? It was a magazine called Reader's Wives, but it was also a section. Yeah. So it was just basically, pictures blokes had taken of their wives with their tops off. So it was a more realistic look at the female form than the models, the high class models in Fiesta. Ladies.
It's a sad business, Rich. But,
Who would you tell? Try and tell youngsters about porn mags now. We had one that at school. I mean, I probably had sort of two or three porn mags in the entire time I was a teenager. But we had one that someone had gotten that we shared around at school for. You were able to keep it for a week, and then you had to hand it on to the next.
Yeah, somebody would bring one in. And try telling young people about pubic hair apart from anything else.
That's true.
They wouldn't believe you.
It's true. I remember there was a letter in one of them, I still remember, and the guy chanced across his neighbour bathing in the kitchen or something, and he said she had nipples like walnuts, and that's put me off the idea of seeing a breast.
Walnuts.
Well, nipples like walnuts.
I
remember about them. The letters were the best bit, because they shouldn't be. The pictures should be the best bit, because I can't visualise. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with my mind. Let's have I'll ask you some emergency questions. Do you think you would have made a good sheriff in the Wild West?
No. I think I'd have been a very cowardly sheriff, and I think I'd have allowed all of the cowboys or gunslingers to more or less do what they like.
Okay.
I'd have been a peripatetic sheriff. I'd have had to move from town to town. riding away from all the angry townsfolk who would be very distressed by how inadequate I've been in my sheriffing duties.
Yeah, I think I probably would be similar. Do you reckon you could shoot a baddie if you had to, if you had a gun?
With training?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. let me have a look. How obsessive are you about your bins? I've become even more obsessed about my bins in lockdown.
Is
it your job, the bins, Robert?
One of the things I've become more obsessive about. I'm quite enjoying. The boring answer is because this is all healed up now. I'm quite enjoying being able to do the nice gendered, lovely gendered male jobs like the bins. I did go through a period of feeling slightly emasculated that Abby, my wife, had to do the bins. Now it's great that I can do the bins again. So I feel like I've got a penis back. And I'm quite enjoying the bins.
Yeah, I don't like anyone touching my bins, but I when the jobs are divvied up, I now do the kitchen floor, and I quite like cleaning the kitchen floor. And I feel quite insulted if my wife even lays a Hoover on the kitchen floor now, because that's my territory. In fact, it's pretty much the kitchen. I think the kitchen is mine. For cleaning, the bins are there and the dishwasher's there, and those are my main useful jobs, I would say. I'm very disappointed in lockdown that we're no longer... We don't have a food... Do you have a food bin in northwest Hampstead?
We do have a food bin, yeah, but we have a thing... We don't have a... Well, I think... Hang on, actually. I think other people, because I've seen it, other people have a little caddy inside, but we don't... We've missed the bus somehow.
Okay.
We never got that when the little caddy van came around. We've got a brown bin, so we use a plastic bag and empty all the shit into... That is quite a smelly job.
Yeah.
All the shit into the brown food waste bin outside.
I thought you might have to carry all your food waste in your hands out to the bin man when he came. And
haven't got the caddy. Naked arms, I just go out there.
But we have to put our food waste in the normal bin now because of the coronavirus. It's cutbacks.
Right.
I'm furious. It's one of the saddest... Putting food in the bin makes me feel quite sick now. Because, you know, I used to think that's going off to some new life, probably a restaurant turned into food.
Your council isn't doing waste food collection?
They stopped it pretty much immediately, yeah.
Oh, blimey.
That's how bad things have got in Hertfordshire. It's like a fucking jungle out here, mate.
Okay, we're all right in Camden so far. In the Bronx.
I'll do one more emergency. What else have I got emergency question wise? Is there another new one I want to give you, or should I give you an old one? Let me have a look. This one, because you haven't got your audio book hasn't been. There will be an audio book of this book, won't there?
It didn't get recorded before it all got locked down, and nobody wants to do it at home.
I can put on a girl's voice. Hello, I'm Kate.
Hello, my name's Kate, and I've got boobs.
I like travelling in time. And making men take their tops off.
That is actually the first sentence. Hello, my name's Kate. I've got boobs. That's how you can tell it's a lady.
I think you're not going to read your own audio book, which is probably the right decision because it's large about a female person. But if you through history, if you could get, I really enjoy listening to the author reading audio books. I have to say, if they're a good, if they're a performer, which many of them are. If you could have any book that hasn't been made into an audio book because of, you know, history or just read by the author from any time in history, but it can be recent history, who would you like to hear read their own books that you can't get because they're dead?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I'm going to answer it with a sketch, which was that Dale and I did a sketch once for the radio show, which is about recently found, never heard before, audio files of Tennyson reading Charge of the Light Brigade. And we have these sort of two stroky beardy intellectuals saying, and now for the first time we're going to listen to Alfred Lord Tennyson reading. Cannons to the left of them, cannons to the right of them. Ooh, there we go. And it sounds quite camp. So I always like the idea of like what Thomas Hardy actually sounded. There is the recording of Hardy, but you can only go so far back, obviously, and what they actually sounded like. Sometimes they do have quite squeaky voices.
Yeah, but often it's like there's a kind of... So, you know, it's
that's
not
very good. That was very good. That was a bit like the guy in Police Academy. It was that level.
It's one of my many skills. Just that one impression I can do. Hey, look, what is there? Do you know what's going to happen? I mean, you're going to take a bit of a rest anyway because there's a virus going on and you don't want to get that. Will we be coming back when you get those last three scenes done?
Once it's deemed sensible for a film crew to stand around quite close to each other filming a last bit of a sitcom, once that's allowed, we'll do that at the first opportunity. But God knows. But I'm not... I'll start thinking about the next book, but I'm not going to shit myself if it doesn't happen over the next fortnight.
and has your near-death experience given you a new perspective on life, or have you slipped back into just thinking out?
Oh, you have to slip back in. I mean, we're not built to constantly go around going, oh, my God, look, the colours are so marvellous. Oh, the greenness of the shirt and the woodenness of the wood. You can't do that. So, I've enjoyed slipping straight back into complacency. Because that's the normal. That's when you know you're alive, when you totally take it for granted.
Well, that is the most profound thing we've ever had on this podcast. I'm delighted to have that. Thanks so much for talking to me, Robert. It's been a delight as always. Good luck. Stay safe out there. And everyone, buy your wonderful book. I got it on Kindle. You can don't even have to go out to get it. You can get it downloaded onto your device, or you can, you know, get it delivered to your house and risk the coronavirus sleeping.
Just quarantine for 24 hours and you're fine.
We've got a little system like that where we leave packages in the sort of, it's not exactly a pat. It's just like a little room outside of our where everything comes in. We leave it in there for a week and then it's all right, isn't it?
Yeah,
but you know. Or to spray it. It'd be like, would you feel bad if your book being delivered to someone killed them with the coronavirus?
Idea of people spraying, washing, and rubbing and dabbing my book. Dab me.
So just give it a wipe before you read it, which would be my advice if you get the poor mag. If you get the poor mag that me and my friends were handing around in the 1980s, give that a wipe before you read it as well. Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Robert Ware, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you very much, Mitch.
You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Robert Webb. Thank you to PES for playing this music. Even in the heart of the virus, they will not give up playing. They love music so much. I would very much like to thank Chris Evans, not that one, for all his help in assisting me in getting these going. I would like to thank everyone at Zoom and Zencaster and OBS and Twitch for making it so easy to use all your wonderful stuff. I would also like to thank my mum and dad and everyone who knows me. We are indebted to our executive producer, who this week is Innes. Just that, Innes. We called him Anus on the set, just as a funny pun on his name. He didn't like it, and it was quite rude. We all got sacked because he was executive producer. I would also like to thank Catherine McKeegan, who runs the excellent Rahulastapa.com website, which is very useful for research purposes for me in remembering what I have asked people before. Worth a look if you're obsessed with Rahulastapa, Rahulastapa. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production for the internet.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. RichardHerring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And GoFasterStripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who's said hello so far. Do come say hello after the show if you enjoyed it, if you want to see me. That'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.